International Airport / Boeing Field. He must fly safely. My stomach knots anew when nausea threatens. Ray and Christian? I don't think my heart could take that. Leaning back, I start my mantra again. Please let him be okay. Please let him be okay.
Mrs. Gray.
Sawyer's voice rouses me.
We're on the hospital grounds. I just have to find the ER.
I know where it is. My mind flits back to my last visit to OHSU when, on my second day, I fell off a stepladder at Clayton's, twisting my ankle. I recall Paul Clayton hovering over me and shudder at the memory. Sawyer pulls up to the drop-off point and leaps out to open my door.
I'll go park, ma'am, and come find you. Leave your briefcase. I'll bring it.
Thank you, Luke. He nods, and I walk briskly into the buzzing ER reception area. The receptionist at the desk gives me a polite smile, and within a few moments, she's located Ray and is sending me to the OR on the third floor.
OR? Fuck.
Thank you, I mutter, trying to focus on her directions to the elevators. My stomach lurches as I almost run toward them.
Let him be okay. Please let him be okay.
The elevator is agonizingly slow, stopping on each floor.
Come on, come on.
I will it to move faster, scowling at the people strolling in and out and preventing me from getting to my dad. Finally, the doors open on the third floor and I rush to another reception desk, this one staffed by nurses in Navy uniforms.
Can I help you?
Asks one officious nurse with a myopic stare.
My father, Raymond Steele, he's just been admitted. He's in OR4, I think.
Even as I say the words, I am willing them not to be true.
Let me check, Miss Steele.
I nod, not bothering to correct her as she gazes intently at her computer screen.
Yes, he's been in for a couple of hours. If you'd like to wait, I'll let them know that you're here. The waiting room's there.
She points toward a large white door, helpfully labeled, Waiting Room, in bold blue lettering.
Is he okay?
I ask, trying to keep my voice steady.
You'll have to wait for one of the attending doctors to brief you, ma'am.
Thank you, I mutter, but inside I am screaming, I want to know now!
I open the door to reveal a functional, austere waiting room, where Mr. Rodriguez and Jose are seated.
Anna!
Mr. Rodriguez gasps. His arm is in a cast, and his cheek is bruised on one side. He's in a wheelchair with one of his legs in a cast, too. I gingerly wrap my arms around him.
Oh, Mr. Rodriguez!
I sob.
Anna, honey.
He pats my back with his uninjured arm.
I'm so sorry,
he mumbles, his hoarse voice cracking.
Oh, no.
No, Papa,
Jose says softly in admonishment as he hovers behind me. When I turn, he pulls me into his arms and holds me.
Jose,
I mutter, and I'm lost, tears falling as all the tension, fear, and heartache of the last 3 hours surface.
Hey, Anna, don't cry.
Jose gently strokes my hair. I wrap my arms around his neck and softly weep. We stand like this for ages, and I'm so grateful that my friend is here. We pull apart when Sawyer joins us in the waiting room. Mr. Rodriguez hands me a tissue from a conveniently placed box, and I dry my tears.
This is Mr. Sawyer, security,
I murmur. Sawyer nods politely at Jose and Mr. Rodriguez, then moves to take a seat in the corner.
Sit down, Anna.
Jose ushers me to one of the vinyl-covered armchairs.
What happened? Do we know how he is? What are they doing?
Jose holds up his hands to halt my barrage of questions and sits down beside me.
We don't have any news. Ray, Dad, and I were on a fishing trip to Astoria. We were hit by some stupid fucking drunk.
Mr. Rodriguez tries to interrupt, stammering an apology.
Calmate, Papa,
Jose snaps.
I don't have a mark on me, just a couple of bruised ribs and a knock on the head.
Dad,
well, Dad broke his wrist and ankle, but the car hit the passenger side, and Ray.
Oh, no. No.
Panic swamps my limbic system again.
No, no, no.
My body shudders and chills as I imagine what's happening to Ray in the OR. He's in surgery. We were taken to the community hospital in Astoria, but they airlifted Ray here. We don't know what they're doing. We are waiting for news.
I start to shake.
Hey, Anna, you cold?
I nod. I'm in my white sleeveless shirt and black summer jacket, and neither provides warmth. Gingerly, Jose pulls off his leather jacket and wraps it around my shoulders.
Shall I get you some tea, ma'am?
Sawyer is by my side. I nod gratefully, and he disappears from the room.
Why were you fishing in Astoria?
I ask. Jose shrugs.
The fishing's supposed to be good there. We were having a boys' get-together. Some bonding time with my old man before academia heats up for my final year.
Jose's dark eyes are large and luminous with fear and regret.
You could have been hurt, too. And Mr. Rodriguez? Worse.
I gulp at the thought. My body temperature drops further, and I shiver once more. Jose takes my hand.
Hell, Anna, you're freezing.
Mr. Rodriguez inches forward and takes my other hand in his good one.
Anna, I am so sorry.
Mr. Rodriguez, please. It was an accident.
My voice fades to a whisper.
Call me Jose.
He corrects me. I give him a weak smile, because that's all I can manage. I shiver once more.
The police took the asshole into custody. 7 in the morning and the guy was out of his skull.
Jose hisses in disgust. Sawyer re-enters, bearing a paper cup of hot water and a separate tea bag. He knows how I take my tea. I'm surprised, and glad for the distraction. Mr. Rodriguez and Jose release my hands as I gratefully take the cup from Sawyer.
Do either of you want anything?
Sawyer asks Mr. Rodriguez and Jose. They both shake their heads, and Sawyer resumes his seat in the corner. I dunk my teabag in the water and, rising shakily, dispose of the used teabag in a small trash can.
What's taking them so long?
I mutter to no one in particular as I take a sip.
Daddy, please let him be okay. Please let him be okay.
We'll know soon enough, Anna,
Jose says gently. I nod and take another sip. I take my seat again beside him. We wait and wait. Mr. Rodriguez with his eyes closed, praying, I think, and Jose holding my hand and squeezing it every now and then. I slowly sip my tea. It's not Twinings, but some cheap, nasty brand, and it tastes disgusting. I remember the last time I waited for news, the last time I thought all was lost, when Charlie Tango went missing. Closing my eyes, I offer up a silent prayer for the safe passage of my husband. I glance at my watch. 2:15 p.m. He should be here soon. My tea is cold. Ugh. I stand up and pace, then sit down again. Why haven't the doctors been to see me? I take Jose's hand, and he gives mine another reassuring squeeze.
Please let him be okay. Please let him be okay.
Time crawls so slowly. Suddenly, the door opens, and we all glance up expectantly. My stomach nodding. Is this it? Christian strides in. His face darkens momentarily when he notices my hand and Jose's.
Christian!
I gasp and leap up, thanking God he's arrived safely. Then I'm wrapped in his arms, his nose in my hair, and I'm inhaling his scent, his warmth, his love. A small part of me feels calmer, stronger, and more resilient because he's here. Oh, the difference his presence makes to my peace of mind.
Any news?
I shake my head, unable to speak.
Jose.
He nods a greeting.
Christian, this is my father, Jose Sr. Mr. Rodriguez, we met at the wedding. I take it you were in the accident, too?
Jose briefly retells the story.
Are you both well enough to be here?
Christian asks.
We don't want to be anywhere else,
Mr. Rodriguez says, his voice quiet and laced with pain. Christian nods. Taking my hand, he sits me down, then takes a seat beside me.
Have you eaten?
He asks. I shake my head.
Are you hungry?
I shake my head.
But you're cold?
He asks, eyeing Jose's jacket. I nod. He shifts in his chair, but wisely says nothing. The door opens again, and a young doctor in bright blue scrubs enters. He looks exhausted and harrowed. All the blood disappears from my head as I stumble to my feet. Ray Steele? I whisper as Christian stands beside me, putting his arm around my waist.
You're his next of kin?
The doctor asks, his bright blue eyes almost match his scrubs. And under any other circumstances, I would have found him attractive. I'm his daughter, Anna.
Miss Steele. Mrs. Gray,
Christian interrupts him.
My apologies,
the doctor stammers, and for a moment I want to kick Christian.
I'm Dr. Crow. Your father is stable but in critical condition.
What does that mean? My knees buckle beneath me, and only Christian's supporting arm prevents me from falling to the floor.
He suffered severe internal injuries,
Dr. Crow says,
principally to his diaphragm, but we've managed to repair them, and we were able to save his spleen. Unfortunately, he suffered a cardiac arrest during the operation because of blood loss. We managed to get his heart going again, but this remains a concern. However, our gravest concern is that he suffered severe contusions to the head, and the MRI shows that he has swelling in his brain. We've induced a coma to keep him quiet and still while we monitor the brain swelling.
Brain damage? No.
It's standard procedure in these cases. For now, we just have to wait and see. And what's the prognosis?
Christian asks coolly.
Mr. Gray, it's difficult to say at the moment. It's possible he could make a complete recovery, but that's in God's hands now. How long will you keep him in a coma? That depends on how his brain responds, usually 72 to 96 hours.
Oh, so long. Can I see him? I whisper.
Yes, you should be able to see him in about half an hour. He's been taken to the ICU on the 6th floor.
Thank you, doctor. Dr. Crow nods, turns, and leaves us. Well, he's alive, I whisper to Christian, and the tears start to roll down my face once more.
Sit down, Christian orders gently. Papa, I think we should go. You need to rest. We won't know anything for a while.
Jose murmurs to Mr. Rodriguez, who gazes blankly at his son.
We can come back this evening, after you've rested. That's okay, isn't it, Anna?
Jose turns, imploring me. Of course.
Are you staying in Portland?
Christian asks. Jose nods.
Do you need a ride home?
Jose frowns.
I was going to order a cab. Luke can take you.
Sawyer stands, and Jose looks confused. Luke Sawyer, I murmur in clarification.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'd appreciate it. Thanks, Christian.
Standing, I hug Mr. Rodriguez and Jose in quick succession.
Stay strong, Anna.
Jose whispers in my ear.
He's a fit and healthy man. The odds are in his favor.
I hope so. I hug him hard. Then, releasing him, I shrug off his jacket and hand it back to him.
Keep it if you're still cold.
No, I'm okay. Thanks. Glancing nervously up at Christian, I see that he's regarding us impassively. Christian takes my hand. If there's any change, I'll let you know right away, I say, as Jose pushes his father's wheelchair toward the door Sawyer is holding open. Mr. Rodriguez raises his hand, and they pause in the doorway.
He'll be in my prayers, Anna.
His voice wavers.
It's been so good to reconnect with him after all these years. He's become a good friend.
I know. And with that, they leave. Christian and I are alone. He caresses my cheek.
You're pale. Come here.
He sits down on the chair and pulls me onto his lap, folding me into his arms again. And I go willingly. I snuggle up against him, feeling oppressed by my stepfather's misfortune, but grateful that my husband is here to comfort me. He gently strokes my hair and holds my hand. "How was Charlie Tango?" I ask. He grins.
"Oh, she was yar,"
he says, quiet pride in his voice. It makes me smile properly for the first time in several hours, and I glance at him, puzzled.
Yar?
It's a line from the Philadelphia Story, Grace's favorite film.
I don't know it.
I think I have it on Blu-ray at home. We can watch it and make out.
He kisses my hair, and I smile once more.
Can I persuade you to eat something?
He asks. My smile disappears. Not now. I want to see Ray first. His shoulders slump, but he doesn't push me. How are the Taiwanese?
Amenable,
he says. Amenable how?
They let me buy their shipyard for less than the price I was willing to pay.
He's bought a shipyard?
That's good?
Yes, that's good.
But I thought you had a shipyard over here.
I do. We're going to use that to do the fitting out. Build the hulls in the Far East. It's cheaper.
Oh.
What about the workforce at the shipyard here?
We'll redeploy. We should be able to keep redundancies to a minimum.
He kisses my hair.
Shall we check on Ray?
He asks, his voice soft. The ICU on the sixth floor is a stark, sterile, functional ward with whispered voices and bleeping machinery. Four patients are each housed in their own separate high-tech area. Ray is at the far end.
Daddy. He looks so small in his large bed, surrounded by all this technology. It's a shock.
My dad has never been so diminished. There's a tube in his mouth, and various lines pass through drips into a needle in each arm. A small clamp is attached to his finger. I wonder vaguely what that's for. His leg is on top of the sheets, encased in a blue cast. A monitor displays his heart rate. Beep, beep, beep. It's beating strong and steady. This I know. I move slowly toward him. His chest is covered in a large, pristine bandage that disappears beneath the thin sheet that protects his modesty. I realize that the tube pulling at the right corner of his mouth leads to a ventilator. Its noise is weaving with the beep, beep, beep of his heart monitor into a percussive rhythmic beat. Sucking, expelling, sucking, expelling, sucking, expelling, in time with the beeps. There are four lines on the screen of his heart monitor, each moving steadily across, demonstrating clearly that Ray is still with us.
Oh, Daddy.
Even though his mouth is distorted by the ventilator tube, he looks peaceful, lying there fast asleep. A petite young nurse stands to one side, checking his monitors. Can I touch him? I ask her, tentatively reaching for his hand.
Yes,
she smiles kindly. Her badge says Kelly, RN, and she must be in her 20s. She's blonde with dark, dark eyes. Christian stands at the end of the bed, watching me carefully as I clasp Ray's hand. It's surprisingly warm, and that's my undoing. I sink onto the chair by the bed, place my head gently against Ray's arm, and start to sob.
Oh, Daddy, please get better, I whisper. Please.
Christian puts his hand on my shoulder and gives it a reassuring squeeze.
All Mr. Steele's vitals are good,
Nurse Kelly says quietly.
Thank you,
Christian murmurs. I glance up in time to see her gape. She's finally gotten a good look at my husband. I don't care. She can gape at Christian all she likes as long as she makes my father well again.
Can he hear me?
I ask.
He's in a deep sleep, but who knows?
Can I sit for a while?
Sure thing.
She smiles at me, her cheeks pink from a telltale blush. Incongruously, I find myself thinking blonde is not her true color. Christian gazes down at me, ignoring her.
I need to make a call. I'll be outside. I'll give you some alone time with your dad.
I nod. He kisses my hair and walks out of the room. I hold Ray's hand, marveling at the irony that it's only now, when he's unconscious and can't hear me, that I really want to tell him how much I love him. This man has been my constant, my rock, and I've never thought about it until now. I'm not flesh of his flesh, but he's my dad, and I love him so very much. My tears trail down my cheeks. Please, please get better. Very quietly, so as not to disturb anyone, I tell him about our weekend in Aspen and about last weekend when we were soaring and sailing aboard the Grace. I tell him about our new house, our plans, about how we hope to make it ecologically sustainable. I promise to take him with us to Aspen so he can go fishing with Christian and assure him that Mr. Rodriguez and Jose will both be welcome, too. Please be here to do that, Daddy. Please. Ray remains immobile, the ventilator sucking and expelling, and the monotonous but reassuring beep, beep, beep of his heart monitor his only response. When I look up, Christian is sitting quietly at the end of the bed. I don't know how long he's been there. "Hi," he says, his eyes glowing with compassion and concern.
"Hi."
"So I'm going fishing with your dad, Mr. Rodriguez and Jose?" he asks. I nod. "Okay. Let's go eat. Let him sleep." I frown. I don't want to leave him. "Anna, he's in a coma. I've given our cell numbers to the nurses here. If there's any change, they'll call us. We'll eat, check into a hotel, rest up, then come back this evening."
The suite at the Heathman looks just as I remember it. How often have I thought about that first night and morning I spent with Christian Gray? I stand in the entrance to the suite, paralyzed. Geez, it all started here.
"Home away from home," Christian says, his voice soft,
putting my briefcase down beside one of the overstuffed couches.
"Do you want a shower? A bath? What do you need, Anna?"
Christian gazes at me, and I know he's rudderless, my lost boy dealing with events beyond his control. He's been withdrawn and contemplative all afternoon. This is a situation he cannot manipulate and predict. This is real life in the raw, and he's kept himself from that for so long. He's exposed and helpless now, my sweet, sheltered 50 shades. "A bath. I'd like a bath," I murmur, aware that keeping him busy will make him feel better, useful even. "Oh, Christian, I'm numb and I'm cold and I'm scared, but I'm so glad you're here with me."
"Bath. Good. Yes."
He strides into the bedroom and out of sight into the palatial bathroom. A few moments later, the roar of water gushing to fill the tub echoes from the room. Finally, I galvanize myself to follow him into the bedroom. I'm dismayed to see several bags from Nordstrom on the bed. Christian re-enters, sleeves rolled up, tie and jacket discarded.
"I sent Taylor to get some things. Nightwear, you know,"
he says, eyeing me warily. Of course he did. I nod my approval to make him feel better. Where is Taylor?
"Oh, Anna," Christian murmurs. "I've not seen you like this. You're normally so brave and strong."
I don't know what to say. I merely gaze wide-eyed at him. I have nothing to give right now. I think I'm in shock. I wrap my arms around myself, trying to keep the pervading cold at bay, even though I know it's a fruitless task, as this cold comes from within. Christian pulls me into his arms.
"Baby, he's alive. His vital signs are good. We just have to be patient,"
he murmurs.
"Come."
He takes my hand and leads me into the bathroom. Gently, he slips my jacket off my shoulders and places it on the bathroom chair. Then, turning back, he undoes the buttons on my shirt. The water is deliciously warm and fragrant, the smell of lotus blossom heavy in the warm, sultry air of the bathroom. I lie between Christian's legs, my back to his front, My feet are resting on top of his. We're both quiet and introspective, and I'm finally feeling warm. Intermittently, Christian kisses my hair as I absentmindedly pop the bubbles in the foam. His arm is wrapped around my shoulders. You didn't get into the bath with Layla, did you? That time you bathed her? I ask. He stiffens and snorts, his hand tightening on my shoulder where it rests.
No.
He sounds astounded. I thought so. Good. He tugs gently at my hair knotted in a crude bun, tilting my head around so he can see my face.
Why do you ask?
I shrug. Morbid curiosity? I don't know. Seeing her this week? His face hardens.
I see. Less of the morbid.
His tone is reproachful. How long are you going to support her?
Until she's on her feet. I don't know.
He shrugs.
Why?
Are there others?
Others?
Exes who you support.
There was one, yes. No longer, though.
Oh?
She was studying to be a doctor. She's qualified now and has someone else.
Another dominant?
Yes.
Layla says you have two of her paintings. I whisper.
I used to. I didn't really care for them. They had technical merit, but they were too colorful for me. I think Elliot has them. As we know, he has no taste.
I giggle, and he wraps his other arm around me, sloshing water over the side of the bath.
That's better.
He whispers and kisses my temple. He's marrying my best friend.
Then I'd better shut my mouth,
he says. I feel more relaxed after our bath. Wrapped in my soft Heathman robe, I gaze at the various bags on the bed. Geez, this must be more than nightwear. Tentatively, I peek into one, a pair of jeans and a pale blue hooded sweatshirt, my size. Holy cow! Taylor's bought a whole weekend's worth of clothes, and he knows what I like. I smile, remembering this is not the first time he's shopped for clothes for me when I was at the Heathman. Apart from harassing me at Clayton's, have you ever actually gone into a store and just bought stuff?
Harassing you?
Yes, harassing me.
You were flustered, if I recall. And that young boy was all over you. What was his name?
Paul.
One of your many admirers.
I roll my eyes, and he smiles a relieved, genuine smile and kisses me.
There's my girl,
he whispers.
Get dressed. I don't want you getting cold again.
Ready, I murmur. Christian is working on the Mac in the study area of the suite. He's dressed in black jeans and a gray cable-knit sweater, and I'm wearing the jeans, the hoodie, and a white T-shirt.
You look so young,
Christian says softly, glancing up, his eyes glowing.
And to think, you'll be a whole year older tomorrow.
His voice is wistful. I give him a sad smile. I don't feel much like celebrating. Can we go see Ray now?
Sure. I wish you'd eat something. You barely touched your food.
Christian, please. I'm just not hungry. Maybe after we've seen Ray. I want to wish him good night. As we arrive at the ICU, we meet Jose leaving. He's alone.
Anna. Christian, hi.
Where's your dad?
He was too tired to come back. He was in a car accident this morning.
Jose grins ruefully.
And his painkillers have kicked in. He was out for the count. I had to fight to get in to see Ray since I'm not next of kin.
And?
I ask anxiously. He's good, Anna. Same. But all good.
Relief floods my system. No news is good news.
See you tomorrow, birthday girl?
Sure. We'll be here. Jose eyes Christian quickly, then pulls me into a brief hug.
Mañana.
Good night, Jose.
Goodbye, Jose,
Christian says. Jose nods and walks down the corridor.
He's still nuts about you,
Christian says quietly. No, he's not. And even if he is... I shrug because right now, I just don't care. Christian gives me a tight smile and my heart melts. Well done, I murmur. He frowns. For not frothing at the mouth? He gapes at me, wounded, but amused, too.
I've never frothed. Let's see your dad. I have a surprise for you.
Surprise? My eyes widen in alarm.
Come.
Christian takes my hand, and we push open the double doors of the ICU. Standing at the end of Ray's bed is Grace, deep in discussion with Crow and a second doctor, a woman I've not seen before. Seeing us, Grace grins.
Oh, thank heavens.
Christian?
She kisses his cheek, then turns to me and folds me in her warm embrace.
Anna, how are you holding up?
I'm fine. It's my father I'm worried about.
He's in good hands. Dr. Sluter is an expert in her field. We trained together at Yale.
Oh. Mrs. Gray? Dr. Sluter greets me very formally. She's short-haired and elfin with a shy smile and a soft southern accent.
As the lead physician for your father, I'm pleased to tell you that all is on track. His vital signs are stable and strong. We have every faith that he'll make a complete recovery. The brain swelling has stopped and shows signs of decreasing. This is very encouraging after such a short time.
That's good news, I murmur. She smiles warmly at me.
It is, Mrs. Gray. We're taking real good care of him.
Great to see you again, Grace. Grace smiles.
Likewise, Lorena.
Dr. Crow, let's leave these good people to visit with Mr. Steele.
Crow follows in Dr. Sluter's wake to the exit. I glance over at Ray, and for the first time since his accident, I feel more hopeful. Dr. Sluter and Grace's kind words have rekindled my hope. Grace takes my hand and squeezes gently.
Anna, sweetheart, sit with him. Talk to him. It's all good. I'll visit with Christian in the waiting room.
I nod. Christian smiles his reassurance, and he and his mother leave me with my beloved father sleeping peacefully to the gentle lullaby of his ventilator and heart monitor. I slip Christian's white t-shirt on and get into bed.
You seem brighter,
Christian says cautiously as he pulls on his pajamas. Yes, I think talking to Dr. Sluter and your mom made a big difference. Did you ask Grace to come here? Christian slides into bed and pulls me into his arms, turning me to face away from him.
No, she wanted to come and check on your dad herself.
How did she know?
I called her this morning.
Oh.
Baby, you're exhausted. You should sleep.
I murmur in agreement. He's right. I'm so tired. It's been an emotional day. I crane my head around and gaze at him a beat. We're not going to make love? And I'm relieved. In fact, he's had a totally hands-off approach with me all day. I wonder if I should be alarmed by this turn of events, but since my inner goddess has left the building and taken my libido with her, I'll think about it in the morning. I turn over and snuggle against Christian, wrapping my leg over his.
Promise me something,
he says softly. It's a question that I'm too tired to articulate.
Promise me you'll eat something tomorrow. I can just about tolerate you wearing another man's jacket without frothing at the mouth, but, Anna, you must eat. Please.
I acquiesce. He kisses my hair. Thank you for being here, I mumble and sleepily kiss his chest.
Where else would I be? I want to be wherever you are, Anna. Being here makes me think of how far we've come, and the night I first slept with you. What a night that was. I watched you for hours. You were just... Yar.
He breathes. I smile against his chest.
Sleep,
he murmurs, and it's a command. I close my eyes and drift. Chapter 18. I stir, opening my eyes to a bright September morning, warm and comfortable between clean, crisp sheets. I take a moment to orient myself and am overwhelmed by a sense of déjà vu, Of course, I'm at the Heathman. Shit! Daddy! I gasp out loud, recalling with a gut-wrenching surge of apprehension that twists my heart and starts it pounding why I'm in Portland.
Hey.
Christian is sitting on the edge of the bed. He strokes my cheek with his knuckles, instantly calming me.
I called the ICU this morning. Ray had a good night. It's all good,
he says reassuringly. Oh, good. Thank you, I mutter, sitting up. He leans in and presses his lips to my forehead.
Good morning, Anna,
he whispers and kisses my temple. Hi, I mutter. He's up and dressed in a black t-shirt and blue jeans.
Hi,
he replies, his eyes soft and warm.
I want to wish you happy birthday. Is that okay?
I offer him a tentative smile and caress his cheek. Yes, of course. Thank you. For everything. His brow furrows.
Everything?
Everything. He looks momentarily confused, but it's fleeting, and his eyes widen with anticipation.
Here.
He hands me a small, exquisitely wrapped box with a tiny gift card. In spite of the worry I feel about my father, I sense Christian's anxiety and excitement, and it's infectious. I read the card. For all our firsts on your first birthday as my beloved wife, I love you. C. X. Oh my, how sweet is that? I love you too, I murmur, smiling at him. He grins.
Open it.
Unwrapping the paper carefully so it doesn't tear, I find a beautiful red leather box. Cartier. It's familiar, thanks to my second-chance earrings and my watch. Cautiously, I open the box to discover a delicate charm bracelet of silver or platinum or white gold. I don't know, but it's absolutely enchanting. Attached to it are several charms. The Eiffel Tower, a London black cab, a helicopter, Charlie Tango, a glider, the Soaring, a catamaran, the Grace, a bed, and an ice cream cone? I look up at him, bemused.
Vanilla?
He shrugs apologetically, and I can't help but laugh. Of course. Christian, this is beautiful. Thank you. It's Yar. He grins. My favorite is the heart. It's a locket.
You can put a picture or whatever in that.
A picture of you. I glance at him through my lashes. Always in my heart. He smiles his lovely, heartbreakingly shy smile. I fondle the last two charms, a letter, C. Oh, yes. I was his first girlfriend to use his first name. I smile at the thought. And finally, there is a key.
To my heart and soul,
he whispers. Tears prick my eyes. I launch myself at him, curling my arms around his neck and settling into his lap. It's such a thoughtful present. I love it. Thank you, I murmur against his ear. Oh, he smells so good. Clean, of fresh linen, body wash, and Christian. Like home. My home. My threatened tears begin to fall. He groans softly and enfolds me in his embrace. I don't know what I'd do without you. My voice cracks as I try to hold back the overwhelming swell of emotion. He swallows hard and tightens his hold on me.
Please don't cry.
I sniff in a rather unladylike way. I'm sorry. I'm just so happy and sad and anxious at the same time. It's bittersweet.
Hey.
His voice is feather soft. Tipping my head back, he plants a gentle kiss on my lips.
I understand.
I know, I whisper, and I'm rewarded with his shy smile again.
I wish we were in happier circumstances and at home, but we're here.
He shrugs apologetically once more.
Come, up you go. After breakfast, we'll check on Ray.
Once dressed in my new jeans and t-shirt, my appetite makes a brief but welcome return during breakfast in our suite. I know Christian is pleased to see me eating my granola and Greek yogurt.
Thank you for ordering my favorite breakfast.
It's your birthday, Christian says softly, and you have to stop thanking me.
He rolls his eyes in exasperation, but fondly, I think. I just want you to know that I appreciate it.
Anastasia, it's what I do.
His expression is serious. Of course. Christian in command and control. How could I forget? Would I want him any other way? I smile. Yes, it is. He gives me a puzzled look, then shakes his head.
Shall we go?
I'll just brush my teeth. He smirks.
Okay.
Why is he smirking? The thought nags me as I head into the bathroom. A memory springs unbidden to my mind. I used his toothbrush after I first spent the night with him. I smirk and grab his toothbrush in homage to that first time. Gazing at myself as I brush my teeth, I'm pale. Too pale. But then, I'm always pale. The last time I was here, I was single, and now I'm married at 22. I'm getting old. I rinse out my mouth. Holding up my wrist, I shake it, and the charms on my bracelet give a satisfying rattle. How does my sweet 50 always know exactly the right thing to give me? I take a deep breath, attempting to stem the emotion still lurking in my system, and gaze down at the bracelet once more. I bet it cost a fortune. Ah, well, he can afford it. As we walk to the elevators, Christian takes my hand and kisses my knuckles, his thumb brushing over Charlie Tango on my bracelet.
You like?
More than like. I love it. Very much. Like you. He smiles and kisses my knuckles once more. I feel lighter than I did yesterday. Perhaps because it's morning and the world always seems a more hopeful place than it does in the dead of night. Or maybe it's my husband's sweet wake-up. Or maybe it's knowing that Ray is no worse. As we step into the empty elevator, I glance up at Christian. His eyes flicker quickly down to mine, and he smirks again.
Don't,
he whispers as the doors shut. Don't what?
Look at me like that.
Fuck the paperwork, I mutter, grinning. He laughs, and it's such a carefree, boyish sound. He tugs me into his arms and tilts my head up.
Someday, I'll rent this elevator for a whole afternoon.
Just the afternoon? I arch my brow.
Mrs. Gray, you are greedy.
When it comes to you, I am.
I'm very glad to hear it.
He kisses me gently. And I don't know if it's because we are in this elevator or because he's not touched me in more than 24 hours or if he's just my intoxicating husband, but desire unwinds and stretches lazily deep in my belly. I run my fingers into his hair and deepen the kiss, pushing him against the wall and bringing my body flush against his. He groans into my mouth and cups my head, cradling me as we kiss. Really kiss. Our tongues exploring the oh-so-familiar but still oh-so-new, oh-so-exciting territory that is the other's mouth. My inner goddess swoons, bringing my libido back from Perda. I caress his dear, dear face in my hands.
Anna,
he breathes. I love you, Christian Gray. Don't forget that, I whisper as I gaze into darkening gray eyes. The elevator comes smoothly to a halt and the doors open.
Let's go and see your father before I decide to rent this today.
He kisses me quickly, takes my hand, and leads me into the lobby. As we walk past the concierge, Christian gives a discreet signal to the kindly middle-aged man standing behind the desk. He nods and picks up his phone. I glance questioningly at Christian, and he gives me his secret smile. I frown at him, and for a moment he looks nervous. Where's Taylor? I ask.
We'll see him shortly.
Of course, he's probably fetching the car. Sawyer?
Running errands.
What errands? Christian avoids the revolving door, and I know it's so he doesn't have to release my hand. The thought warms me. Outside, It's a mild, late summer morning, but the scent of the coming fall is in the breeze. I glance around, looking for the Audi SUV, and Taylor. No sign. Christian's hand tightens around mine, and I look up at him. He seems anxious. What is it? He shrugs. The hum of an approaching car engine distracts me. It's throaty. Familiar. As I turn to find the source of the noise, it stops suddenly. Taylor is climbing out of a sleek white sports car parked in front of us.
Oh, shit! It's an R8!
I whip my head back to Christian, who's watching me warily. You can buy me one for my birthday. A white one, I think.
Happy birthday, he says,
and I know he's gauging my reaction. I gape at him because that's all I can do. He holds out a key.
You are completely over the top, I whisper. He's bought me a fucking Audi R8. Holy shit! Just like I asked.
My face splits in a huge grin, and I jump up and down on the spot in a moment of unguarded and unbridled overexcitement. Christian's expression mirrors mine, and I dance forward into his waiting arms. He swings me around.
You have more money than sense, I whoop.
I love it. Thank you. He stops and dips me low suddenly, startling me, so that I have to grasp his upper arms.
Anything for you, Mrs. Gray.
He grins down at me. Oh, my. What a very public display of affection. He bends and kisses me.
Come, let's go see your dad.
Yes, and I get to drive? He grins down at me.
Of course, it's yours.
He stands me up and releases me, and I hurry around to the driver's door. Taylor opens it for me, smiling broadly.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Gray.
Thank you, Taylor. I startle him by giving him a swift hug, which he returns awkwardly. He is still blushing when I climb into the car, and he closes the door promptly once I'm inside.
Drive safe, Mrs. Gray,
he says gruffly. I beam up at him, barely able to contain my excitement. Will do, I promise, putting the key in the ignition as Christian stretches out beside me.
Take it easy. Nobody chasing us now,
he warns. When I turn the key, the engine thunders to life. I check the rear view and side mirrors, and, spotting a rare moment of clear traffic, execute a huge, perfect U-turn and roar off in the direction of OSHU.
Whoa!
Christian exclaims, alarmed. What?
I don't want you in the ICU beside your father. Slow down,
he growls, not to be argued with. I ease off the accelerator and grin at him. Better?
Much,
he mutters, trying hard to look stern and failing miserably. Ray's condition is the same. Seeing him grounds me after the heady road trip here. I really should drive more carefully. You can't legislate for every drunk driver in this world. I must ask Christian what's become of the asshole who hit Ray. I'm sure he knows. In spite of the tubes, my father looks comfortable, and I think he has a little more color in his cheeks. While I tell him about my morning, Christian wanders off to the waiting room to make phone calls. Nurse Kelly hovers, checking Ray's lines and making notes on his chart.
All his signs are good, Mrs. Gray.
She smiles kindly at me. That's very encouraging. A little later, Dr. Crow appears with two nursing assistants and says warmly,
Mrs. Gray, time to take your father up to radiology. We're giving him a CT scan to see how his brain is doing.
Will you be long?
Up to an hour.
I'll wait. I'd like to know.
Sure thing, Mrs. Gray.
I wander into the thankfully empty waiting room where Christian is talking on the phone, pacing. As he speaks, he gazes out the window at the panoramic view of Portland. He turns to me when I shut the door, and he looks angry.
How far above the limit?
I see. All charges, everything.
Anna's father is in the ICU. I want you to throw the fucking book at him, Dad.
Good. Keep me informed.
He hangs up.
The other driver? He nods.
Some drunken trailer trash from Southeast Portland.
He sneers, and I'm shocked by his terminology and his derisory tone. He walks over to me, and his tone softens.
Finished with Ray? Do you want to go?
No. I peer up at him, still reeling at his display of contempt.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Ray's being taken to radiology for a CT scan to check the swelling in his brain. I'd like to wait for the results.
Okay, we'll wait.
He sits down and holds out his arms. As we're alone, I go willingly and curl up in his lap.
This is not how I envisaged spending today,
Christian murmurs into my hair. Me neither, but I'm feeling more positive now. Your mom was very reassuring. It was kind of her to come last night. Christian strokes my back and rests his chin on my head.
My mom is an amazing woman.
She is. You're very lucky to have her. Christian nods. I should call my mom, tell her about Ray. I murmur, and Christian stiffens. I'm surprised she hasn't called me. I frown in a moment of realization. In fact, I feel hurt. It's my birthday, after all, and she was there when I was born. Why hasn't she called?
Maybe she did,
Christian says. I fish my BlackBerry out of my pocket. It shows no missed calls, but quite a few texts. Happy birthdays from Kate, Jose, Mia, and Ethan. Nothing from my mother. I shake my head despondently.
Call her now,
he says softly. I do, but there's no reply, just the answering machine. I don't leave a message. How can my own mother forget my birthday? She's not there. I'll call later when I know the results of the brain scan. Christian tightens his arms around me, nuzzling my hair once more, and wisely makes no comment on my mother's lack of maternal concern. I feel, rather than hear, the buzz of his BlackBerry. He doesn't let me stand up, but fishes it awkwardly out of his pocket.
Andrea,
he snaps, businesslike again. I make another move to stand, and he stops me, frowning and holding me tightly around my waist. I nestle back against his chest and listen to the one-sided conversation.
Good. ETA is what time? And the other, packages?
Christian glances at his watch.
Does the Heathman have all the details? Good. Yes. It can hold until Monday morning, but email it just in case. I'll print, sign, and scan it back to you. They can wait. Go home, Andrea. No, we're good. Thank you.
He hangs up. Everything okay?
Yes.
Is this your Taiwan thing?
Yes.
He shifts beneath me. Am I too heavy? He snorts.
No, baby.
Are you worried about the Taiwan thing?
No.
I thought it was important.
It is. The shipyard here depends on it. There are lots of jobs at stake.
Oh.
We just have to sell it to the unions. That's Sam and Roz's job. But the way the economy's heading, none of us have a lot of choice.
I yawn.
Am I boring you, Mrs. Gray?
He nuzzles my hair again, amused. No. Never. I'm just very comfortable in your lap. I like hearing about your business.
You do?
He sounds surprised. Of course. I lean back to gaze directly at him. I like hearing any bit of information you deign to share with me. I smirk, and he regards me with amusement and shakes his head.
Always hungry for more information, Mrs. Gray.
Tell me, I urge him as I snuggle up against his chest again.
Tell you what?
Why you do it.
Do what?
Work the way you do.
A guy's got to earn a living.
He's amused. Christian, you earn more than a living. My voice is full of irony. He frowns and is quiet for a moment. I think he's not going to divulge any secrets, but he surprises me.
I don't want to be poor,
he says, his voice low.
I've done that. I'm not going back there again. Besides, it's a game,
he murmurs.
It's about winning.
a game I've always found very easy.
Unlike life, I murmur to myself. Then I realize I said the words out loud.
Yes, I suppose.
He frowns.
Though it's easier with you.
Easier with me? I hug him tightly. It can't all be a game. You're very philanthropic. He shrugs, and I know he's growing uncomfortable.
About some things, maybe,
he says quietly. I love philanthropic Christian, I murmur.
Just him?
Oh, I love megalomaniac Christian, too, and control freak Christian, sexpertise Christian, kinky Christian, romantic Christian, shy Christian. The list is endless.
That's a whole lot of Christians.
I'd say at least 50. He laughs.
50 shades,
he murmurs into my hair. My 50 shades. He shifts, tipping my head back, and kisses me.
Well, Mrs. Shades, let's see how your dad is doing.
Okay. Can we go for a drive? Christian and I are back in the R8, and I'm feeling giddily buoyant. Ray's brain is back to normal, all swelling gone. Dr. Sluter has decided to wake him from his coma tomorrow. She says she's pleased with his progress.
Sure.
Christian grins at me.
It's your birthday. We can do anything you want.
Oh, his tone makes me turn and gaze at him. His eyes are dark. Anything?
Anything.
How much promise can he load into one word? Well, I want to drive.
Then drive, baby.
He grins, and I grin back. My car handles like a dream, and as we hit the I-5, I subtly put my foot down, forcing us both back in our seats.
Steady, baby,
Christian warns. As we drive back into Portland, an idea occurs to me. Have you planned lunch? I ask Christian tentatively.
No. You're hungry?
He sounds hopeful. Yes.
Where do you want to go? It's your day, Anna.
I know just the place. I pull up near the gallery where Jose exhibited his work and park right outside Le Picotin restaurant, where we went after Jose's show. Christian grins.
For 1 minute, I thought you were going to take me to that dreadful bar you drunk-dialed me from.
Why would I do that?
To check the azaleas are still alive.
He arches a sardonic brow. I blush. Don't remind me. Besides, you still took me to your hotel room. I smirk.
Best decision I ever made,
he says, his eyes soft and warm. Yes, it was. I lean over and kiss him.
Do you think that supercilious fucker is still waiting tables?
Christian asks. Supercilious? I thought he was fine.
He was trying to impress you.
Well, he succeeded. Christian's mouth twists in amused disgust. Shall we go see? I offer.
Lead on, Mrs. Gray.
After lunch and a quick detour to the Heathman to pick up Christian's laptop, we return to the hospital. I spend the afternoon with Ray, reading aloud from one of the manuscripts I've been sent. My only accompaniment is the sound of the machinery keeping him alive, keeping him with me. Now that I know he's making progress, I can breathe a little easier and relax. I'm hopeful. He just needs time to get well. I've got time. I can give him that. I wonder idly if I should try calling Mom again, but decide to do it later. I hold Ray's hand loosely as I read to him, squeezing it occasionally, willing him to be well. His fingers feel soft and warm beneath my touch. He still has the indentation on his finger where he wore his wedding ring, even after all this time. An hour or two later, I don't know how long, I glance up to see Christian, laptop in hand, standing at the end of Ray's bed with Nurse Kelly.
It's time to go, Anna.
Oh, I clasp Ray's hand tightly. I don't want to leave him.
I want to feed you. Come. It's late.
Christian sounds insistent. I'm about to give Mr. Steele a sponge bath, Nurse Kelly says.